Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to read some excerpts from my new novel, Habit of a Foreign Sky. I guess I'll start with the title, because I stole it. That's what writers do all the time. We're constantly stealing things. I stole it from a wonderful American poet, Emily Dickinson. Here's the poem. Away from home are some and I, an emigrant to be. In a metropolis of homes is easy, possibly. The habit of a foreign sky we difficult acquire, as children who remain in face the more their feet retire. And that poem is from 1894. And there's one other short epigraph to the novel, which is this. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade when in eternal lines to time thou growest, which is from sonnet number 18 by Shakespeare. So I'll just start at the beginning. Her maid, Conchita, told her. The call from Hong Kong woke Gail in New York at 3 a.m. For once, she was silenced, unable to pass judgment. Ma'am? For a second, Conchita wondered if her mistress had fainted, but decided that no, it was the shock. The police said she probably died the moment the bus hit her. She must have. An image of her mother, flung into the air and slammed against a wall. Horrific. Yet even now, Gail's temper threatened to erupt. She checked herself, doing her best to stick to the facts. First, unexplainable fact. Her mother had crossed the harbor over to Kowloon, which surely was an unnecessary journey. Taking a deep breath, she said in a quiet voice, but why was she in Kowloon City or even crossing Togwawan Road? Everyone knows the traffic's dangerous around there with all the trucks. Conchita heard the familiar intake of air. I'm so sorry, ma'am. Then she began to weep as the confession flowed. It was all my fault because she said she wanted to go out when I was cleaning the bathroom. I told her to wait, said I'd accompany her, but when I got out of the bathroom, she was gone, and even though I ran out after her, she had disappeared already. There was a silence. Gail pressed her wrists against the back of her neck. The persistent headache of the last 2 days was migrating downwards. She wanted to shout across the world, "How could you? Why didn't you?" But the words froze in her throat. And then Gail heard her maid's sobs, wrenching, unceasing, sincere, and this touched her. The choked voice continued, "I'm very sorry, ma'am, very, very sorry. Please don't be angry with me. God will punish me forever, forever. If you want me to leave right now, I'll go. I'm so sorry, ma'am." "It's okay, Conchita. It's not your fault." The real responsibility was hers, she knew. "Thank you for calling. I'll be back Sunday on the usual flight," and hung up. Clutching the receiver, Conchita, still crying, crossed herself. So we open on a death. I guess it's one of the many sort of shaku things I decided to do at the beginning of this book. And then Gail, she meditates for a while. She doesn't sleep very well that night, obviously, and she then checks out, heads to the airport, and now we are in the executive lounge at JFK. Gail switched off her cell phone. Surely this once she could be forgiven. The truth was, no one rang when she was in transit, not family, Conchita, office staff, her boss, or New York, since she always thoroughly communicated her schedule. Gail's habit of remaining perpetually on call was perhaps to reassure herself that at 46, as the Asia-Pacific VP for Northeast Trust, an investment bank specializing in asset-securitized corporate financing, she was indispensable. "You're worse than a doctor," her mother often complained, "and people need doctors." Yet now, if only she could call someone. But whom? Gordy's laughter resounded, raising her mother from the dead as their laughing voices merge. No, not him. Her half-brother wasn't real family, so he could wait. Jason Chuck, her ex, a flash of anger whipped Gail. How angry she still was now, 6 years later, at his desertion, his betrayal, with a mere secretary at that. Her son's death photo filtered through memory. Why had everyone, all her family, deserted her? Irrational demons, irrational pain. Her head throbbed. Gail directed her gaze, at the row of planes, forcing her focus on their orderly formation at the gates. The pain subsided. Immediately behind her, a voice snapped, "Kina, don't go running off now." A girl ran into her vicinity and stopped. Her light brown hair was Caucasian curly, but her complexion and features Asian, most likely Chinese. Gail always found it easy to pick out others like herself, and in this girl, the mixed blood was obvious. "Hi," said the girl, who stared curiously. She waved at Gail. Gail waved back. "Hi." The child looked like a waif, hair uncombed, smudged face. Her old-fashioned frock, a pale pink cotton print with puffed sleeves, was too tight for her small frame. She gazed at Gail. "Are you blind?" The girl's father hurried over and took the child's hand. "I apologize for her impolite behavior." Then turning his daughter, "Come away now and leave the lady alone." His girl could be tiresome. It had been lucky running into the lounge manager, a friend from way back who let them in. Keeping Kina still, however, as he must hear, wasn't easy. Removing her sunglasses, Gail said, "It's quite all right. She was simply being very logical." "Too much so, sometimes." He was looking down at Kina, frowning. Looking up, he was startled by this woman. This lady, who was, no, not beautiful, but striking despite her exacting expression. Elegant demeanor, her features chiseled, prominent cheekbones finely formed lips. The tapered, stylish haircut displayed a well-shaped head. A sculptor's rev, a lust stream. He held out his hand. "I'm Xaviadopoulos, by the way." She did not at first extend her hand, but did after a pause and shook his. She did not give her name. Gesturing at the seat opposite, he asked, "May we join you?" His slight accent was vaguely European. "Oh, yes," Gail wanted to say. Talking to other parents was one of the few pleasures of travel, and such rare encounters gave her joy. She liked his manner and the directness of the girl, although she felt a strange sympathy, almost pity for her scruffy appearance, which seemed out of place in this lounge. But today, Gail did not trust herself not to break down, not now after the news about her mother. And could she really not say, "I once had a little boy," and then have to tell all, forcing him into embarrassed sympathy for a stranger? Instead, she said, "I have to board my flight, I'm afraid." Xavier was disappointed. He would have liked adult company, especially a woman. She was from Hong Kong, he was certain. Her slight awkwardness and appropriately fashionable dress suggested it. Also, despite her being obviously biracial, she struck him as very Hong Kong Chinese, sophistication masking a deep-rooted conservatism. With the women especially, you were never sure of anything. In this case, he might have taken a chance. She wasn't wearing a wedding ring or any rings, and women like her generally did, along with all the requisite carrots. Gail pulled a pale pink ribbon barrette out of her purse, a gift for her mother who liked girlish things. "Here," she held it out to the child, "something to remember me by." The girl reached for it greedily, excitedly, while her father demurred. It troubled him a little that Kina took so easily to strangers. Gail reassured him, "Please, it's nothing. You have a very pretty child." Kina held the gift up towards her. "Can you help me put it on?" Gail combed her long fingers through the girl's hair and pinned it into a ponytail. She rubbed a Kleenex over Kina's cheek, cleaning off the smudge. The ribbon looked slightly too large on her, but matched the pink in her dress. Xavier smiled. "Thank you, then. It's kind." Turning to the child, "What do you say to this nice lady?"
"Merci. Thank you. Xie xie,"
she curtsied, flashing a charming smile and pirouetted away, her ponytail bobbing as she turned. Gail and Xavier laughed at her trilingual performance. So that's more or less how the book opens. As you have heard a little bit about the mother, I'll jump ahead to the funeral. It's chapter 3, and give you a little introduction to the other women in this book and in Gail's life. During the wake, every time Gail glanced at the enlarged death photo of her mother, she wished she had chosen a different one, one that made her nose look less flat and her hair a little less unyielding in its formidable chignon. In the cold room, air-conditioned and only slightly colder, her mother's face glowed from the open casket, as gorgeous in death as in life. It was too soon to be back here, surrounded by these garish trappings. The last funeral had been simpler, more elegant, secular. But this one, which paid respect to Chinese tradition, was entirely for Mom. Around her, the last of her mother's dance hall girlfriends wept. These perennial strangers of her childhood were women Gail had never completely known. Mom had made sure of that. But now their presence, en masse, roused long dormant images and memories. Each woman separately forced upon Gail an envelope of money. They wanted to contribute to funeral expenses for their daizhe, the oldest among them, who was accorded the privileged eldest sister status. Number one, Ayi, prattled beside Gail. We were going to give her a big celebration for her 80th birthday this year. Wouldn't that have been nice, Gailo? All these women had trouble saying Gail, the American name her mother insisted on, forgoing a Chinese one, desperate as she had been to win her lover's approval, in the mistaken belief that this would make him leave his wife and marry her. We were so sorry our crossing the New Year dinner had to be cancelled, but your mother said we'd celebrate her birthday. Did you know that? No, I didn't, Gail replied. Yeah, we already began planning at the Spring River Tides restaurant. You remember the one near your old place? We were going to order double boiled shark's fin and bird's nest for dessert. She loved all that stuff. Wouldn't the woman shut up? It's very kind of you. She would have appreciated it. We were going to ask you to lend her to us for a day, and we'd have taken care of her. We're like family. That's why she promised to look after me, you know. She stopped abruptly. She hadn't meant to bring that up, especially not here. Luckily, Gail didn't seem to have heard, and she gushed on. It's good to see you again, my daizhe's girl. Number one, Ayi, who penned all the letters from her illiterate mother during the 16 years Gail lived in the U.S., might easily have been a real aunt. All the women were elderly, except for their outfits, the two fancy shoes and shiny clothes. Nightlife hovered around them like an unrelenting spirit, the way it had around Mom. Gail observed how the funeral director greeted these women's arrivals. So that's what she was, his eyes steered, for all the daughter's respectable airs. It had been so different at Gu Guan's funeral, when his school friends arrived with their parents, classmates from International, the elite private school that taught an American curriculum for kids of wealthy locals and expatriates. And the father, Dr. Jason Chuck, from one of the leading private hospitals. The funeral director had salivated over those moneyed guests, even handing out his business cards most inappropriately. Yes, funeral homes in Hong Kong are quite amusing at times, if you can get past the idea of why you're there. I'll jump ahead a little bit further to towards the end of the wake. This novel takes place in early 1998, right in the middle of the Asian economic crisis, which is one of the reasons Gail is traveling quite a bit between New York and Hong Kong. And anyway, here we have an American character up here. She was surprised when, towards the end of the wake, Janie and her father appeared. The last time she had seen Janie was at her son's funeral. Gail did not know them well, although she had a good impression of Janie, who was generally a neat and well-mannered child. Gu Guan is her son's name. Gu Guan had often gone to Janie's to play, but the reverse was not frequently the case. It wasn't that she hadn't allowed him to invite friends over, but somehow it seldom happened. Her acquaintance with the father was confined to small talk when he dropped his son off or she picked him up. He was always the only parent home. He was from Oregon, wrote for the Asian Wall Street Journal, and Gail occasionally saw his byline, E. Hammond, on the editorial pages, which she glanced at but rarely read. His wife was local Chinese and ran a leading ad agency, but Gail had never met her. Thank you for coming, she said, but puzzled by their presence asked, how did you know? Conchita called to let us know, he replied. Janie wanted to come. She liked your mother very much. The girl huddled close to her father's leg and barely glanced at Gail. He continued, will you remain in Hong Kong? Janie's father was speaking to her as a fellow American, she realized, which she supposed she was, although hardly like him and his family. No, not like them at all. Her mother had once called them a real family, which made Gail cross. She had retorted, "Isn't our own family real, too?" She told JD's father, "Why, yes, I guess, I don't know." Rick Hammond studied her through a journalist's eyes. No lightweight professionally, he was aware of her status, but a curious woman, difficult to befriend, who used to hurry off with barely any conversation, as if wanting to remove Gu Guan quickly. It had been a while since he'd seen her, although he had run into her once about 6 months earlier, but she had not recognized him until he reminded her who he was. Janie once said she was afraid of Miss Sito, and he told his daughter she couldn't possibly know her well enough to feel that, although truthfully, he understood. "Do you have any other family?" "No." Her eyes shifted towards the altar. "Not really." He wondered at the brief pause. "If I can help in any way, please call." "Thank you." They both knew she wouldn't. It was shortly past noon. Gail suddenly remembered last Thanksgiving, when she'd managed to take a day off because New York shut down, although it was a work day in Hong Kong. When Gu Guan had turned 6 and begun attending international, she celebrated, ordering a traditional meal from one of the city's foreign caterers, since she had never roasted a turkey and had no desire to try. Her son had been born on a Thanksgiving, and just as important, she wanted him to learn the customs of his nationality. Besides, it also made her mother happy. But last Thanksgiving, her mother had been unwell, and the day passed quietly. There was no turkey. Her mother, who had had such hopes for an American life for them all, something Gail also vaguely envisioned for their future once Jason left. Now nothing mattered. She had never even taken Mom or Gu Guan to America for a visit. Very quietly, she began to cry. The funeral director came into the room. It was time, he told her, to move onto the crematorium. "Only family ride in the hearse. Did you want a van for the others?" "Only family," the funeral director was saying again, indicating the hearse and driver. All the women had left except number one, Ayi, who hovered. Dai Jie was her family, she wanted to say, but hesitated, a little afraid of Gail. Dai Jie had kept all the Ayis away from her daughter once Gail was in her early teens. Gail cast around nervously, her mind scattered, unable to focus. Her eyes landed on Ayi's expectant face. On an impulse, she asked, "Will you ride with me in the hearse?" "Of course, Gailo," she replied, "please. Of course I will." So I guess I'll just stop there, and, you know, Anna, maybe we'll come up and we'll talk about the book. Thank you.